I can definitely tell you that dreams do come true. When I was 10 years old, this auditorium was built, and as soon as I saw this pulpit, I said, I want to preach there on a Sunday morning. Here I am, 31 years later. But I want you to relax a little bit, because I promise you this will be the fastest 3 hours of your life. Back several years ago, a very nice couple, good friends of ours, gave me this DVD, and it was called A Song. There we go. It was called The God Who Speaks. Now, this is a documentary, and it goes over how we got the Bible. It goes over the actual proof, archaeological discoveries of the Bible, how we can trust it, where it came from, how did they decide? How did they figure out what was actual a document, a manuscript, or was it a forgery? After I watched this documentary, and now after several years, I watched this documentary about 1,000 times. I learn something new every time I watch it. But it completely changed my study. I was not only just looking at the words that we have today, I wanted to know, is the wording that we have in the English today the exact what they had? And I went down this long rabbit hole. And I can tell you that the English translations of the Bible that we have are decided on by teams of people who are experts in Greek and Hebrew and Aramaic. And I can tell you that there is not an exact translation. There's not a word-for-word translation between Greek and Hebrew into English. They're conveying ideas, which means they will read a Greek sentence and then they will look at it and say, okay, how can we translate this into English to convey the idea? That's what you have. That's kind of what got me away from analyzing if and is and all that other stuff, because that's what I used to do. And this just opened up my world. Well, inside of that documentary, they presented evidences, and what happened with me over the last several years is I started researching different evidences, and it proved the gospel narrative. It completely proved it. How does archaeology prove the gospel? 80% of archaeological discoveries today go along with the biblical narrative. The only reason why you're not hearing about it is because the media doesn't want to talk about it. That's the only reason. Now, I'm not here to get political or anything like that, so you guys can relax on this. But I'm going to show you some things that have actually been discovered in the last couple of hundred years, and even in the last 40 years that you never heard of because they just don't advertise them. You're going to notice this boat here in the picture. This is a Galilean boat. In Mark chapter 4 and verse 1, it says that he got into a boat on the Sea of Galilee in order to preach because the crowd was too heavy. Well, as somebody who investigates the Bible, I want to know what boat. Did they really have boats back then? Is this just part of a story? This was written 2,000 years ago. Do they have any boats? They do now. Back in 1986, there was a drought around the Sea of Galilee, which dropped the water level, and it showed way more of the Sea of Galilee on the sea bottom. Two brothers discovered this boat. It took 12 days to excavate this boat. They had to hurry up and get it out of there because the water level was going to come back up. Carbon dating was done. And what they found out was this boat was built between 50 BC and 50 AD. This boat was around at the time of Christ. So they nicknamed it the Jesus boat. This boat proves that it is very likely that Jesus was standing on a boat in the Sea of Galilee. Not only that, we have archaeological cave drawings about that have these fishing boats. And they were able to match that up. I want to mention this. Carbon dating has actually gotten better, not worse, over time. They keep improving the technology. Here's a bigger picture of the boat. This boat matches up everything that we have that is congruent with the text. How does archaeology prove the gospel? You're looking at this chest right here. What if I told you it was the high priest Caiaphas' tomb? Back in 1990, they were building a water park around Jerusalem. I know when we see Jerusalem on the television, we're thinking everything is absolutely ancient, and that's not true. They have the ancient city and all that, and they also have technological advances. They're building a water park. A dozer that was grading everything out started to tip forward. The operator backed it up. They noticed there was a cave. They had to get experts down in there, and what they noticed was this was a highly decorated tomb, and it had the name Caiaphas on it. There was bones inside of that chest. So the way that the Jews would bury their dead is they'd put them inside of an actual tomb, and then when everything rotted off and just bones were left, they would take those bones and they would put them inside of a chest inside of another tomb that was decorated for a memorial. That's exactly what they did with Caiaphas. Again, they did carbon dating. They matched this to a male figure that would have been around the time of Christ, and he died at around the age of 70 years old. There's his name. That was in 1990. There's a professor, retired professor now from Yale, that he was on that archaeological discovery and he was trying to get the word out and he never could do it. I found him on a lecture. How does archaeology prove the gospel? What if I told you that we had an actual tablet that has Pontius Pilate's name on it? Before this discovery, there was no, by the way, they discovered this in Caesarea in 1961. Before this discovery, we had nothing physical saying that Pontius Pilate was actually real. We had nothing. We had the biblical text, but we didn't have anything of stone like this, and then they discovered this. And it was authenticated. It was found in Caesarea. And on this stone says that he was dedicating a specific amphitheater in the name of Caesar. That's pretty incredible. Not only that, but it was the Caesar Tiberius, which was at the time of Christ. Here's a larger picture of the stone. This is just a very, very small part of archaeological finds that they have found in the last 200 years, 250 years. The more they excavate, the more that they end up finding, and the more it proves the biblical narrative, which is really neat for me because this is real. It's not just some story that we've had drilled into our brain over and over again since childhood. It's absolutely 100% real, and all of this did happen. Now, how do external ancient texts prove the gospel? So we have the biblical text. We all have our Bibles in one way or another, whether it's paper or it's digital format. But how does an external source prove the Bible? Now, understand, this is something that somebody wrote down that we wouldn't call it necessarily God-breathed. How would it prove? Well, by consistency. Josephus says Jesus was called Christ and was crucified, and you can find that in his Antiquities, chapter 18, verse 63. He says that Jesus was called Christ and crucified. Now, he won't talk about necessarily his resurrection. But he says Christ exists and he was crucified. Tacitus says Jesus was crucified during the reign of Tiberius. Now, in Luke chapter 3, in verse 1, we see Tiberius's name, and he was Caesar. So the biblical narrative backs that up. Then we have the early writers, the early church writers of the first century. And I'm not kidding, they have all of these. You might have something in your library at home, or you can find something on Amazon to where it's like a book of their writings or something like that. These are real documented stuff that they have that's behind closed doors. Clement of Rome, he lived between 35 and 101 AD. We have his documents. Papias of Hierapolis, 60 to 30 to 131 AD. Again, we have his documents. And then we have Polycarp, 69 to 156. This stuff is real. We have this. And all of these guys are writing about Jesus. Now, it doesn't mean that everybody is believing who's writing that Jesus is the actual Christ, which is what's interesting, because the way that I figure out if something is real from not real, I want it verified by somebody. If I have an ancient manuscript and they said, okay, this is the book of John and this is real, I want it verified by a Christian, an atheist, a Muslim, and a Jew. And just so you know, one of the greatest Greek scholars that we have in this country is an atheist. He will tell you that Paul wrote Paul's books. There's not a book called Paul, by the way. It's right next to Hezekiah 13:13. But he will tell you that, yes, 1 and 2 Corinthians was written by Paul. Paul did exist. Now, when you get into the actual text of what Paul was talking about, he'll say, no, I don't believe that. And, of course, he's got his reasons for that. There's also a Muslim Greek expert who's at the top in the UK. The main person that they go to talk about the Greek text is a Muslim. Now, obviously, he doesn't agree with what the text says, but he can authenticate anything, whether it's real or not real. How does the gospel prove itself? Now, this part's fun. This part is fun because we have a massive amount of evidence that is just actual scripture. Reliability of the text. So when I talk about reliability of the text, what I want to do is I want to compare basically your ancient writers that are non-biblical to biblical writings themselves. So we have Pliny the Elder. We have 200 copies of his. But the oldest copy that we have is 700 years after his death. Now, scholars will look. They will look at his manuscripts and go, okay, we can rely on these manuscripts. But it was 700 years after his death. Plutarch. Oldest copy of Plutarch is 800 years after his death. Josephus. This one kind of floored me a little bit because all my life I've been hearing about Josephus. We always hear about Josephus. The earliest one we have is 800 years after he wrote the original. 800 years after. And scholars will look at all of these and say, yes, this is viable, this is true, this is correct, but it was 800 years later. How about we go further back? Herodias, his histories. We have 109 copies. By the way, he lived far into the BC area. Our oldest copy is 1,500 years after his death. Our oldest copy. I'm not talking about oldest viable copy, oldest copy somebody can actually read and get something from it. I'm talking about the oldest copy is 1,500 years later. How about Xenophon's Hellenica? Oldest copy, almost 1,800 years after. If we were to compare that to the text today, that would be like us saying, okay, our earliest manuscript is when the Wright brothers invented the airplane. Would you trust it then? It's like, whoa, wait a minute here. I would want something that was a little bit closer to the timeline. So that's all antiquity. That is all secular stuff. And again, you have experts that they rely solely upon this and say, yeah, that's exactly what Xenophon said, okay? Let's look at the New Testament. This is P66. P66, the P stands for papyrus. Papyrus was used in the first century. At first, it was used in scrolls, and then you get into the second century, and they start putting it in a codex, which is a book form. Okay, and the running joke inside the church in the scholarly level is the Christian writings were the ones that were utilizing the actual codex book form, and that was the only time that we were ahead of the technological curve. You know, in the lecture that I saw, I got a whole lot better laugh than that one. So this is P66. This is dated between 200 and 250 A.D., this is only 100 years or so removed from John. This is John's gospel. This is a complete John's gospel. And let me make this note. Some people were wanting to say that the Council of Nicaea was saying, okay, well, that's when the divinity of Jesus was created or produced or invented. No. No, if you want to, Dan Brown's Da Vinci Code is hysterical fiction, is what it is. It's absolutely hysterical fiction. And this right here proves it. We have proof. Why? Because that first line there, if you'll read with me here, I'm just kidding. It says, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. It says that Jesus is God. Every single one of our Greek manuscripts, that is John, opens up the exact same way. Not in the same writings, because the dialects are different in Greek. There's no sentence structure in Greek, guys. But they all open up with the same thing. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. Which means they had copies of this way before the Council of Nicaea. Nicaea was about them articulating the divinity of Christ with the humanity of Christ so that they didn't get it wrong. Because as we know, Jesus is God, and that's kind of hard in order to get straight in your head. But this was this earliest codex of John was around 200. So let's go even further. How about scraps of the gospel? This scrap of the gospel is our earliest scrap of a manuscript. This is from John 18. It is our oldest one we have. It's P52, Papyrus 52, discovered in 1836. It is dated between 100 and 125. Now, we know that John wrote the Gospel of John between 90 and 100. This scrap was around when the original was around. This is the oldest that we have. And this scrap is only about 10, 20, maybe even 30 years away from the original writing. The more that they keep digging and excavating, the more of this stuff that they find. Now let's talk about the volume. The volume. How many of the scraps do we have? How many of the scrolls do we have? How much of the ancient text? Well, let's just look at the New Testament text for right now. Greek New Testament manuscripts, we have 5,800 plus. Now when I talk about a manuscript, I am talking about an actual book. Okay, an actual book. The average New Testament manuscript is 450 pages long. That's the average. So that's pretty thick. We have in Latin So by the time you get out of the second century into the third century, everything goes from Greek to Latin. We have over 10,000 manuscripts in Latin alone. And then we have other New Testament manuscripts, and it's 5,000 to 10,000 of those. They're written in other types of languages, Coptic, you name it. They seriously copied the word. And by the way, when we talk about ancient manuscripts, we're talking about things that were written out by hand before the printing press in 1300. So that's what we're talking about here. They copied the word of God over and over and over and over again. Now, what about the quote from the New Testament fathers, the church fathers, those who weren't an apostle, but maybe they were an associate apostle or an associate of apostle, and they lived in the second century? We have over a million quotations from them. In fact, the Greek scholars tell us of today that you could produce the Bible several times over just from what the church fathers wrote down. They said that a lot of them did not have the gift of brevity when they were actually doing commentary on these particular texts. All right, so here's an example of how much we have. Visual aid here. So a pulpit is normally around 4 feet tall. The average classical work, so just take an average classical work, non-Bible, it's about 4 feet tall. The podium here. So you have the Empire State Building, which represents the New Testament. But we actually need to go up a little bit higher. So this is actual size. So you've got the, hey, I get to use my laser pointer here. Okay, so right here, that's the actual 4 feet tall podium right here. Now here's the Empire State Building. Over a mile high. If you were to stack all the manuscripts together. That's just the New Testament. We're not talking about the Old Testament. We're not talking about the Dead Sea Scrolls that included every book of the Old Testament except for Esther. We're not talking about that. We're just talking about the New Testament. That is a lot of evidence. The first verse that we had up on the screen was Hebrews chapter 11 and verse 1. Faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. Our faith is based on evidence. The reason why Jesus and the apostles were doing miracles was because of evidence. Today, we have their writings. We have the area in which they lived. You can actually go to Peter's house around the Sea of Galilee. It is marked. They discovered it. The authors of the text. So how does the gospel prove itself? The authors of the text. All four gospel accounts include the life, death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus Christ. Some include some other things, some can include more prayer, some include more acts, but all of them include the main premise that it's adding up to, and that is the life, death, burial, resurrection of Jesus Christ. Early church writers all agree who wrote each gospel. All the gospels were originally anonymous. They didn't have anybody's actual signature on them. But the early church writers all agree that Mark received his account from Peter. Now, you don't know that unless you go into the second century and you start looking at those and what all the early church writers agree. They all said that Mark got his gospel from Peter. Three gospels are eyewitness accounts, Matthew, Mark, and John. They're all writing even at kind of different time eras. You got Mark, which is your first gospel, and then you've got Matthew right after that. We know John is at the end. And you'll notice that John is written completely different than the other three. Why is that? Well, because John gets to the end of his life, and he's seriously, in my opinion, I almost hit the mic there. He's looking at the fact that the deity of Christ needs to seriously be explained, and that's exactly what he does. The majority of the New Testament talks about Jesus Christ. So take all the Gospels away. And let's say you're dealing with the general epistles and the Pauline epistles. Could you still get the gospel out of Paul's writings? Could you still get the gospel out of everybody else or the author of Hebrews? And you can. Jesus Christ as Son of God is mentioned 15 times. The resurrection of Jesus is mentioned 16 times, and Jesus Christ is raised is mentioned 23 times. My whole point in all this, and I could have put more in there, but I was begged not to go too long. Literally begged. You guys have no idea. I grew up at this church. If you don't know me, I grew up at this church, and anyway. There is so much more information on this, but my point today was just to simply plant a seed within you to even go further. Look further. And don't ever be ashamed of the faith that you have, because there is more evidence for Jesus Christ, his death, burial, resurrection on this planet than anything else in history. This morning we want to offer an invitation to anyone who is in need. Maybe there was something that I said this morning that pricked at your heart. I hope so. Maybe you're ready to have a relationship with Jesus Christ. Maybe there's something else that you need. Whatever you need, please come while we stand and while we sing.